This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal.
Ford Community College presents the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol, November 13th through December 6th. Performances are Fridays at 7 p.m., Saturdays at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. Tickets are only $12 for adults, $10 for students, and $5 for children 12 and under. Please call 313-845-9817 for reservations or further information. All performances will be held in the Adrey Auditorium at HFCC's Dearborn campus. Call 313-845-9817 for A Christmas Carol, November 13th through December 6th.
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views about Dearborn and the surrounding areas. Hi there, I'm your host, Jay Koronick. Happy to be with you today, even though I think I've got a touch of one kind of flu or the other, so I'm sitting at least 3 feet away from my colleagues here, and in case there is all of a sudden a strange amount of silence, they're going to move right on in and take over the show. I hope I can continue with you, but we have three of our news team here today. And almost ran out of seats. We have Dennis Reimars, Amy Powers, and Netta Piggy in here to make comments and to introduce the important stories from our community today. We're also expecting a special guest, and And they want to talk. So hi, Dennis.
Hi. I guess this is my mic check, correct?
Yeah, well, you know, at least I don't have to figure out who's on what mic because every mic is being used. So I've just got everyone turned up here, so we don't have to worry about that part anyway. We are expecting a special guest. I did play, and I don't usually do that, right after our theme introduction, the public service announcement we have for A Christmas Carol. This is not the movie, but I was taking some notes on this. This is the theatrical presentation. How is theater different than a movie? I was thinking about. Okay, well, listen to this, and they're smiling here. They know, but number one, it's completely interactive, like the best computer programs, completely interactive, the audience and the performers. It is also 3D.
Okay.
Okay, because life is 3D.
Right.
Okay, and it's got surround sound. Because life has surround sound, and we have two ears. So there's sound all the way around our Adrey Auditorium here at Henry Ford Community College in the Fine Arts Center. Yes, the theater program here at HFCC is back in the Adrey Auditorium. Over the last 6 months, 8 months, they had to be in other locations because of renovations, and maybe some of you know the story. But they still carried on the great traditions and did great plays. But now we're back in the Adrey Auditorium, and this is from tonight. It starts tonight, the first performance of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, the classic story done as a drama, as part of the theater for young audiences. But this is a great play for all ages to see. There's songs, there's dancing, as well as, of course, the great story of Charles Dickens. Besides being totally interactive, besides being in 3D, theater and surround sound, theater also
is a color.
I forgot that. Yes. Yes, full living color. Thank you. And anybody else want to jump in? Okay.
Not yet.
No.
Okay. The big finale is it's a unique, a totally unique experience each time the play is performed.
I was going to say that.
I mean, how often does that happen in life? You know, it's like finding a rare book, the only copy that's left or something, or a rare CD in our used CD collections that we put up for sale in various times of the year. One-of-a-kind experience, which means, hey, if you love the play, maybe you want to go back several times, because each time it will be a little different because of that interactivity, because it is live, living people. And the reason I did that is because, of course, there is a big theatrical Disney release of A Christmas Carol that's in the theaters now. And, you know, it's animated, and it's in 3D over at the Henry Ford IMAX Theater. But
cartoon?
Yeah. Well, feature length. Feature length.
Okay. Jim Carrey's voice as Scrooge, I believe.
Right. But I'm sure Jerry Jablonski, if he was here, head of our theater program, would say, hey, go see both if you'd like it.
Just as long as you pay for the mine.
Yeah. I pay, well, by the way, our admission fee is adults $12, children 12 and under only $5. Students with ID, showing that you are a student, I assume that might be high school as well as college, $10. Groups of at least 10, $5 a seat, but you have to call ahead for information, 313-845-9817. And there's a lot of performances coming up. Fridays at 7, a little earlier because it's family-friendly. Saturdays at 2 and 7, and Sundays at 2 p.m. only. Plus, there is a week of performances for school groups. And you might be able to sneak into some of those. You better call first, though. They're at 10 o'clock in the morning. Now, there's no performances on the Thanksgiving weekend. So I guess you take the family to see the movie version. But then come back here. I mean, just think about the difference that we just stated about how great live theater is, how unique, and how it does everything a movie, even a 3D movie, can do, but better. I mean, okay. Also, before we get into other stuff, because it's happening at 2 o'clock today. Today is good old Friday the 13th. People aware of that?
What's happening at 2 o'clock? I didn't remember.
Ah, well, Friday the 13th, forget about that. It's just a bad luck idea. But today, Friday the 13th, at the U of MD campus, just south of Henry Ford Community College campus, Nikki Giovanni, who is a great contemporary American poet. I guess you have to be contemporary if you're still alive and still working. And that's from, but she's got a discussion, not about poetry, but a discussion about race. And we're not talking about Kentucky Derby here. Okay, well, a discussion about race, so there might be a panel going on because it's 3 hours long. Starts at 2 p.m., right after the show is over, and it's in the University Center, their Student Center building, and it's free and open to the public. At least I think it's free. It was in the paper. I'm fairly sure it's free. Okay, folks, it's a big deal. Nikki Giovanni, one of our great contemporary American poets, and she is African-American, too, so I guess she knows something about racial discrimination, at least when she was growing up, before she was famous, perhaps. And that's happening starting this afternoon, right after the show, from 2 to 5 p.m. The Dearborn Symphony Orchestra is going to be in love with the music from Poland and Polish composers tonight, including Chopin, piano concertos. Yeah, right. And that's going to be at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center at 8 p.m. Tonight. So that's going to be great, and we wanted to just remind you about that the last second. Okay, let's turn to the papers here. Dennis, I know you were very concerned about it. Please present to our listeners about the budget cuts at the Dearborn Public Schools.
I was concerned about it. Well, yeah, I think we all are. We all know the story regarding all the cuts that they had for the city had to make specific cuts, and now comes the fun time, the fun part of actually figuring out where things will be cut. And there's a couple different plans that they have, and I did not digest the plans as thoroughly as I'd like to. But I do know that the two different plans they had outlined will, let me open my page here. I think they actually have them all set up.
Yeah, it's on page 8A of the, we're looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, November 11th, just 2 days ago. There's a plan G and H, and we're not sure which way they're going to go. There's also an issue, too, of maybe some money coming back, but we'll talk about that after we're done with this. I was concerned that Plan H which is maybe what they'll have to do. First of all, I just circled some things, eliminating 90 full-time teachers. Now, a lot of part-timers are going to go, but each year we eliminate dozens of more full-time teachers in Dearborn. Soon there'll be no teachers left. I mean, this is just crazy. The only other thing that really irked me, other than cutting high school sports budget by $100,000, which is not the whole budget at all. I mean, that just maybe keeps them from going to a couple regional matches or getting new uniforms every week or something. I'm exaggerating, but it's nowhere near the full budget. So they're not eliminating anything per se, although I wonder how many of those teachers are art and music teachers. You know, there must be some full-time art and music teachers in there. But they're going to close the Montessori program they have. Now, Montessori is a great preschool program. Of course, you say, well, schools just got to stick to elementary and maybe kindergarten. But Montessori starts before kindergarten and can continue beyond, although the Dearborn Schools doesn't. It switches them over usually around kindergarten or certainly by first grade. That would be a terrible loss, folks. My daughter went through Montessori School, and it was a wonderful head start on education and socialization. They actually taught the kids, get this, to be nice to the other kids and the teacher. It was like a lesson in courtesy.
Got to keep that going through the years.
And respect. You're right, Amy. I mean, this is, it's a, I mean, read about Maria Montessori and her theories if you want to go read about how she started this special kind of educational reform and set up these special schools. There is a big Montessori school that does nothing but Montessori in Dearborn Heights. And it costs thousands of dollars a year for tuition. To send even your preschool child there. I think it's worth every penny if you had the money, but the Dearborn Montessori, much less expensive. Now, maybe not with all the facilities or as true to the full extent of the cause of Maria Montessori, but that would be a terrible thing. Now, they're also going to close Cotter in fall 2010 and eliminate Galileo. I don't know what those are. Have I been out? Are those new schools?
There must be schools.
There must be school buildings. Cotter and Galileo. Never heard of them.
Okay. Or programs.
I don't know. Galileo, is that a telescope program? Or I don't know what a Mr. Cotter would be. Now, they are eliminating a couple of principals. Four elementary assistant principals in this Plan H. And
well, that's probably no loss.
Counselors. One counselor per high school. Three counselors going to go. So. Yeah. Kids will go through school and not know why or what they're going into next. And this is a disaster. I mean, and appropriately, this last week on Tuesday, we had a petition that was taken by the Dearborn Public Schools, Dearborn PTA, up to Lansing, to Andy Dillon and our representative, Gino Polidori. And supposedly that would put all of the extra money for the schools that had more funding before Proposal A went into place, okay, it sort of grandfathered that extra amount of money that the state would put into the rich districts that were willing to pay more money in the first place. And that could be reinstated, even though Granholm cut out that $184 million, not $184 million for Dearborn, but for all these richer school districts in Michigan. And she cut that out of the budget that was passed a couple weeks ago. And so I think that's why Plan H would be such a disaster. But there will be a reestablishment of hundreds of dollars per student, or $100 per, I don't know what, but a lot of these programs, maybe it'll just be Plan G or something, which won't eliminate the 90 teachers, for example, if that money comes back in. Governor Granholm promised that when she got the vote from the Senate and was introduced to the Senate this week, that was the plan. Haven't been able to check as of today. Of course, they don't meet on Fridays, so it's a four-day work week for them up there. Isn't that sweet? Anyway, if they were doing their work, and they did pass it in the Senate, then it'll probably be signed shortly by Granholm, because she said even though she was the one that cut the money out, if she got a bill from the Senate, she'd sign it. And, of course, it would be Senate and the House, but she said she'd sign it. And make it pass. So we can get some of that money back. And as I said last week, some of us may philosophically say, well, the state's funding, Proposal A, And Ned, I think you had an editorial there that you were going to comment on in that same paper you're looking at. No? Okay. It's from the conservative think tank here in Michigan, so we know what they're going to say. But they think Proposal A is a wonderful thing because it equalizes the funding from the state to every district, whether it's rich or poor. Now, each district has the right to spend it however they see fit. Okay, and that might make a difference if they spend it on weird things or luxury items. I don't know if there's any such thing in the school district. But, well, that's the story on that. We're still waiting to see. Let you know next week. You might email Governor Granholm and Representative Polidori and Representative Dillon to see if things are moving along. Because I agree, Proposal A sounds great, but it's still not enough money per student, okay? It's a wonderful way to equalize education, but to cut the districts that are already doing more for their kids and to do it suddenly. I mean, if they want to do it, why don't they do it 3 years from now and slowly cut back those extra funds? I mean, if the legislature wanted to say, well, and then maybe fold that extra money across the whole state even. But no, they're out of money. The state's broke. You know, what was it, almost $2 billion in debt. It was like 1.4, and then it kept going up, and oh my gosh. So that's the scoop on that. Dig deeper. That's our theme song, our slogan here.
Granholm made that promise because she doesn't think the Senate's going to approve it.
The Senate, as we know, we watchers of the Michigan State Senate, are controlled by a large majority of Republicans. And Republican Leader Bishop totally against things, although as Tim Skupik has pointed out in previous editorials in the Dearborn Press and Guide, he's that Lansing reporter. He's got his own TV show and public broadcasting in Michigan off the record, and it is, or on the record, one of the two. It's something about the record, and he's done that for like 25, 30 years. He knows Lansing, and it seems that Bishop, who is the majority leader of the Senate, a Republican, he keeps flip-flopping. First he says, oh, all taxes are bad. And they say, well, that one's okay, or that one can go back in, or that can come out. So I'm not sure we know where he's going to stand on this if Granholm says that she will sign it if it passes. It depends on whether he wants to be the Republican nominee for governor, I think, next year. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think he has a chance. There's some other people running. But so we'll find out. Amy, did you fully state what you were going to say?
I was just saying it was a plan that I think backfired on Granholm. She's trying to play both sides of the fence, encouraging the people after she's cut it out of the bill to come up and bring their petition. It's a failed strategy, and it's
manipulative.
It's very
totally
manipulative.
I had no choice. This is what I had to do. You forced me to do this. Now you can make it right, but you have to do this. Yeah,
you're right. Exactly, when education right. was her platform all along.
I don't really like being manipulated. You know, I don't know. Whatever. I'm just looking at these plans. The plans G and Plan H, and basically they're two different ways of accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish. Meaning, you know, cutting money out of the district, and one of them is cutting salaries the salaries of almost 2,000 people, but keeping their jobs, while the other is eliminating a lot of jobs.
I thought it was a good thing to point out is that the school board and other groups are asking for, they're hoping the unions would agree too in this budget tough time, to cut their salaries 6.3%.
6.3, yeah.
I don't know how they came up with 6.3. It's just that is a huge chunk of an annual budget. I mean, okay, it's only $6 out of 100, but it's still a big loss for people. I even heard, and I hope this isn't true, but you know, the Dearborn Public Schools and Henry Ford Community College, whereof we are and broadcast from, are part of the same district, technically. In other words, even though we have on the books two separate budgets, it's really one pool of money, legally.
Right,
but okay? Our millage passed.
Yeah, our millage passed, and we've got so many students that most of our costs here, are easily compensated for. In other words, we're making a profit because of all the enrollment we have in these tough times. And I heard, and I hope it's not true, and I don't want to cast aspersions, but it's happened in the past, is that the Board of Trustees want Henry Ford Community College to share their burden and feel their pain, and that they're asking for certain positions to be ended, curtailed here, and certain budget cuts and certain rollbacks in money for support staff. Now, I think if they tried to cut 6% out of the teachers, full-time teachers, we'd go on strike here.
Absolutely.
Because we are making money. But should we suffer? I mean, I can understand taking maybe some of the quote-unquote profit from our operation to help the K-12, since it's all legally in the same pool. But what do our voters think about that? They approved our millage. Would they like their millage, some of that money from the big pool, to go back to the K-12 because they're desperate? They probably would, because it's all Dearborn, you know. But I'm just saying it's not fair to our operation, which has been so good and so successful under all of our leadership for the last couple of years, and so essential to training people for jobs right away. K-12, they're training for jobs in the next 10 years. We're training for jobs tomorrow, you know, next week or when they graduate in June. And so it just doesn't make any sense to me to make us feel part of their pain. Okay, skim some money off the top, but don't make us feel their pain. There's no reason for that.
And I don't mean to sound naive, Jay, but is this something that if something like that, would it just be done arbitrarily based on somebody's or certain people's in power, their position of power?
Yeah.
Or would they ask the voters?
No.
This is what we think we need.
This has happened in the past with the Board of Ed. I've been around for 40 years here in the Dearborn system and 30-plus years as a Dearborn resident. And I think it's at least twice in the past that we were forced to feel the pain of the K-12 by taking cuts that we didn't deserve at all, and that our programs were making money.
No, it's apples to oranges, really.
Right. And although everybody knows how important K-12 education is in the area.
Did you get any benefit from the K-12 in it? Did it ever go the other way?
No, never. No, never, 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 never. I'm never in the history, and if I'm wrong, hey, remember, all the opinions on this show, folks, are just those of us here, Amy, Ned, Dennis, and myself, and not necessarily anyone else. You know, certainly it's not the opinion of Henry Ford Community College here, and I'm sure even our president, Dr. Mee, who we talked to 2 weeks ago here, wouldn't want me to even bring this up, that they will just grin and bear any sort of collective responsibility that the Board of Ed sort of wants us to take on in their difficult times. And we know K-12 and Dearborn has difficult times here, although I hope the full extent of all these cuts and job losses won't have to happen anyway, and I hope that Governor Granholm is able to sign a bill from the House and Senate soon to reestablish that extra little money for rich, formerly rich districts. Not rich anymore.
Rich. No.
Yeah. Okay, no. Let's move on. It is important, and I don't know if Amy, did you want to talk about Dearborn winning the suit against the developer?
Oh, let's see.
No.
No, she wasn't ready.
Thanks for asking.
She's looking at something else.
Yeah, that's a nice picture you're drawing, Amy. What is that?
No, I was taking notes. Hold on, this is
figure.
The wrong...
Ned, do you have a story you'd like to share?
Yeah, we can move to something else. No.
While she's looking for that, all we have to do is find out who will pay and when. You know, when you lose suits, you got to collect the money.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, let me summarize this, and maybe Amy or somebody wants to jump in. If not, I've got the paper right in front of me. Okay. Dearborn has won its suit against Burton Katzman. They were the developer for the West Dearborn area, the area that formerly was mostly Jacobson's department store. And the judge has ruled that Burton Katzman must build the building between those parking decks, those two parking structures, parking towers in West Dearborn, and finish the condos that they had agreed to. In fact, they found out one of the things that helped win the case so clearly and so quickly for the city of Dearborn is that Burton Katzman said, well, it's difficult economic times the last couple of years. We can't borrow the money. It seems like they never tried.
Right. There's no proof that they...
There's no proof they ever put an application into anybody even to get the money. Now, if... Will they get the money?
The facts are probably true.
You know, if they tried now, I mean, they have to make a tough decision unless they want to appeal, and they could appeal, forever. You know, they have to make a decision corporate-wise. Do they want to apply for the money? Do they want to complete what they promised? maybe that's not the best plan for Dearborn right now. As we talk to the candidates for Dearborn City Council, Dearborn would be a lot better off just to take the money that they owe us. But where are they going to get the money? Well, they did get a contract for $100 million to build Unity Studios in Allen Park. That's right, the same people we just sued, Bert and Katzman. Allen Park decided, oh, what wonderful developers. They surely can build our studios for us. And that's because they don't have to borrow the money. The money is supposedly there from Unity Studios. And, of course, who are they? Well, they're a brand-new operation, you know, but the producer, who has some Hollywood experience and also apparently was raised in this area, the producer, the owner.
Right, Southfield, I think.
Yeah. They say they have the money. So Burton Katzman wouldn't have to raise any money. They just, well, if they don't have to raise any money and they're making $100 million, there must be some profit in there. They could give us $12 million and just write us off. I mean, just end the deal. Because I think every one of the challengers that we interviewed for Dearborn City Council said, we should use the money for something else. We shouldn't necessarily, and maybe we should, but we shouldn't necessarily, as the judge says, go right ahead and do what you said you're supposed to do. If they choose not to do that, then I'm sure the city would, you know, out of court, agree to some amount of money. The last thing I read was because of a few extra charges the city of Dearborn put in there, city wants $21 million now, started at $17 million. And I was saying if they settle out of court, they might agree to a little less. You know how that goes, negotiate.
Sure.
$12 to $17 million would be wonderful for the city of Dearborn, whatever they spend it on. And I think, as most of our candidates said, they should pay off the debt on those parking structures. They should pay it off. I mean, we still got to pay as a city to maintain them and to keep them clean and to keep them policed. You know, because that's the trouble with a parking structure. It's not like a lot. There's a lot of places to hide and, you know, robbery, muggings and things like that. So you've got to have cameras and somebody monitoring them and so on. But you know, to pay those suckers off and then to see what happens after that.
What did the city lose by making this contract?
It's all speculation.
What damages did they see? What's their hardship?
Well,
they tore down an existing building that was paying taxes? Is that what they could say?
No, well, Jacobson had moved out. But the issue is economic development. There's a sort of a, what is it, a special tipping point.
Okay.
Let's call it a tipping point. It's sort of like they need so many businesses and so many residences of a certain nature to make a community really succeed financially. Okay, to keep businesses there. As we know in West Dearborn, because of the proposed plan, which is much larger and had more variety of businesses and housing there, that they haven't reached the point of sustainability. It's kind of like a forest. If you get physically the natural forest has too few acres, it can't sustain itself. Slowly, the trees will die, the animals will die. It needs to be a certain minimum size before it's self-sustaining. That's just a natural environmental principle.
This is an economic argument.
Yeah, it's an economic argument about the potential success of the complete project versus what they're facing now, which is businesses coming and going. They can't survive there because there's not enough traffic. There's not enough people hanging around. Of course, I feel the plan didn't include live entertainment, and I mean or movie theater that showed alternative films, not to try to compete with, you know, Hollywood. That both of those things, I mean, we had Tenney Street Roadhouse, which was a wonderful live music venue, and the landlord raised the rent so much that that had to close. And that's the facts, folks. Landlord, it's not the people who are running it badly. I'm sorry, that's my opinion, but I know behind the scenes what went on there. And that could still happen if the landlord would just take less money and if he could attract somebody in there that wouldn't be afraid of his track record of trying to squeeze every penny out of his residents until they go belly up and move out.
They're getting nothing now.
That's right. Yeah, but the landlord is apparently rich enough. He doesn't care if he gets nothing.
Yeah, there seem to not be an issue. Well, you were talking about that area. A great quote in this article, this is from Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly. He said, and this is in a previous Press and Guide article, he said, we are anticipating that the project would generate at least $20 million in revenue. now Burton Katzman's saying, wait a minute, that's all speculative. You can't say that that's exactly it. But now I guess it's coming to the point in the process where they're saying, how much money really? What are the damages really? They're asking the city that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we have a resolution on the damages issue.
How can you?
It's just, there's several things that still have to be ruled on by the judge.
Absolutely.
One is just, you got a contract, it's valid, you still exist,
That's the bottom line. And the thing that what you just said made the most sense is that without other things going on, this particular project with hotels, residential, and then the parking structure, with nothing to see or go to in Dearborn, it would have been empty anyway. And I think that was your point, without the live music. So
we're going to take a break now here on the new Dearborn topical talk show that we call the new WHFR Journal. Okay, it used to be called the Dearborn Journal many years ago. We started it here, and now it's a cable TV show run by the city. Okay, I told Mayor Guido, you stole our name. He was very upset, and I don't know, because maybe he knew it happened, and I happened to point him out and catch him at it. Anyway, the city of Dearborn deserves to have their own Dearborn Journal. Okay, but we are the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. We are coming to you from Henry Ford Community College on the station Making Ways, WHFR.FM. We'd like to feature now in our break two back-to-back editorials by Jim Hightower. And I'd like to mention, if you don't know, Jim Hightower has his own website, but it's wonderful that he has just won the 2009 Puffin Nature National Prize, Nation Prize, Puffin/Nation Prize. Boy, am I sick today. For creative citizenship. And they have their own press release. So the Nation Institute announced today that national radio commentator and best-selling author Jim Hightower is the 2009 recipient. And that's a $100,000 prize. Yeah, they're going to give him money. He will receive the award on December 7th at the Nation Institute annual gala dinner in New York City. An advocate for everyday people whose voices are seldom heard in Washington and on Wall Street, Hightower believes that, quote, politics isn't about left versus right. It's about top versus bottom. He broadcasts daily radio commentaries, and we feature a couple of them from each week on our show here at no charge. He provides them to non-commercial stations for no charge on subjects ranging from public health care to Hamid Karzai. And I try to find things that are, you know, relate to Dearborn. So here's award-winning and recently award-winning Jim Hightower and his two editorials. The first, it's true. The rich really worry about you. I'm sure going to feel good to hear about that. And also, this thing about sick leave policies. Do you know that people employed at places like Walmart don't get sick leave? What could that mean? Well, take a listen to these two comments from award-winning Jim Hightower.
You will be comforted to know that the rich are concerned about you. Not concerned about your joblessness, lack of health care, or anything else about your economic condition. No, no, it's your psychological state of mind that has them worried. In particular, they are troubled by what you think about them. With the rich, you see, it's always about them. They sense a disquieting psychological mood among the hoi polloi, an anger at what Wall Street has done, a feeling that the rich are greedy and get unfair advantages. To think such thoughts, they say, is unhealthy for you emotionally. After all, says a wealth management advisor for high-dollar bankers, to revile the rich is to revile the American dream. So turn your anger into appreciation and view the rich as your role models. Besides, your negative vibe is upsetting the extremely well-off. They feel mischaracterized, says a Merrill Lynch wealth manager. Many give to charity, and some even get buildings named after them, making donations to universities and cultural centers. As the Merrill Lynch advisor put it, then to be characterized as not doing their fair share begins to wear on them. See, you've made them sad. So lighten up on the rich and just be happy. Otherwise, explains a financial psychologist, we will create, quote, a generation that distrusts investing and associates wealth with greed. Oh, and how irrational is that? Well, says the financial shrink, young people have, quote, watched their parents lose their money, and now they think you can't trust banks. We need to work around that. This is Jim Hightower saying, get real. It's not hard-hit workaday folks who need to be stretched out on the psychiatrist's couch. It's the wealthy elites. They're the ones who made a mess of our economy, and now they want to feel better about themselves by blaming us for being just a wee bit angry at their narcissism.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Sometimes, being mean to people can turn around and bite you on the butt, even if you're a corporation and, physiologically speaking, have no butt. One of the meanest and stingiest workplace policies is the denial of paid sick days for employees, a reality faced by almost 40% of private sector workers. These people are mostly in lower-wage jobs and cannot afford to miss even a single day's pay. So the result of the corporate minginess is that tens of millions of coughing, wheezing, sneezing, vomiting employees are on the job, rather than calling in sick and staying home. These include food handlers, healthcare workers, and others who deal directly with the public. While this corporate approach saves money for employers, ill workers pay a heavy price, and their contagious illnesses can easily spread to coworkers and customers. This has always been a public health problem, but with a swine flu pandemic sweeping our country, it has become a national health threat. In addition to workers who get no paid sick days, millions more are employed by such outfits as Walmart that aggressively discourage any use of the benefit. This retailing behemoth runs a, quote, points system. Use one sick day, and you get one demerit. Accumulate five or more, and you can be fired. This minginess is now biting corporate butts. Because of swine flu, executives are demanding that ill employees stay home. Yet, workers get no pay or get demerits if they do that, so they don't. Instead, they're at work, greeting customers with, may I help you? This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, these same companies are fighting a legislative requirement to provide a mere 7 paid sick days a year. 7. The new company's slogan could be Walmart, spreading swine flu one customer at a time. Achoo!
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Just to be accurate, yours truly, Jay Kornick, back with you here in the WHFR Journal Show for Friday the 13th of November 2009. I didn't get my flu at Walmart. I don't shop at Walmart for a number of reasons, and that gives me another reason not to go there. And all these other places, it's hard to believe. And of course, I've been a teacher, and we do get sick days, but we do get sick at times. And we shouldn't be in teaching all those kids if we're sick and coughing all and sneezing all over them. But we shouldn't be penalized because we're sick, especially if we have health care, you know, that our medical treatment would be paid for if we just take the initiative and go to the doctor. And so all those things work together, folks. It's all a complete part of the picture. And those businesses that are fighting this new law, and I think it's a national law they're proposing, is that every business, no matter what size, must allow their workers 7 sick days. That means days off with pay if you're sick. Go ahead, Ned.
Part of the health care program thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I don't know about 7 days. I think it's 5.
It will make us a healthier nation, first of all. It will prevent, to a great extent, these contagious diseases from spreading as far as they do. And as long as we have people without adequate health care, even if they have the health care paid for, but if they're going to lose money because they can't go to their job that day, that's a double whammy.
Teachers have the advantage of the those retired teachers that substitute teach. And it's about $100 a day in Dearborn. It's a great advantage.
Well, they know that the classes can continue with some continuity in college.
With experienced people that have some experience.
The classes are much more complicated in college with many different assignment levels and complexity of lesson plans and so on, and so they don't generally bring in substitutes unless the teacher is going to be out for more than a couple days in a row. By the way, they do check folks in the Dearborn Public Schools and Henry Ford Community College. If you're sick more than is it 2 or 3 days in a row? By contract, you have to have a note from your doctor that says you're ready to come back. It also proves that you were sick, too.
Mm-hmm.
Your note from your mommy won't work.
No. Unless she's a physician.
Unless she's a physician treating you, yes. That would be convenient. Okay, well, you know, we're victims of segues. We're always looking for transitions, smooth transitions in the media. So this is Ralph Nader's comment. You know Ralph Nader.
Okay. Absolutely.
Run for president. And now his number one issue is universal single-payer health care. But here's his comment.
Amen.
Thank you.
Wow.
Here's
how do you feel about it, Ned?
Amen.
But here's his comment.
It's easy.
I think this is very valuable for all of us to realize on the state of the health insurance reform that's in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. right now. I'll read it rather quickly because we got some other stories here locally we want to do. Ralph Nader says, the House of Representatives debate on health insurance reform is over, with the Democrats failing the people and the Republicans disgracing themselves as having left. Just turned out the other microphone. Sorry, I sound so much better now. Okay, it's a radio thing. As having left their minds back in the third grade. And Ralph says, with apologies to third graders. House Democrats were determined to pass any bill with a nice-sounding name, such as, quote, the Affordable Health Care Act for America, unquote. Single-payer, full Medicare for all was never on the table, even though a majority of citizens, physicians, and nurses, and we have an interview over the air on this show, too, a few months back from the head of the Nurses Association of California. They support single-payer, full Medicare for all. It's a far more efficient, free choice of healthcare professionals system. He goes on to say, Ralph Nader, there are no effective cost containment or prevention measures in the House bill right now. I'm going to read that again. There are no effective cost containment or prevention measures in the bill itself that was just passed by the House. The public option, Ralph says, is so weak it will be a receptacle for the sickest of patients among the meager number of people who qualify for its coverage. There are no provisions to reduce the number of people, almost 100,000, who die annually from medical malpractice in hospitals. Nor is there a major program to reduce the tens of billions of dollars that's stolen yearly out of Medicare from criminals inside and outside the medical profession. And I have to do an aside here. I thought there was. I thought that was the minimum that we do is catch some of the corruption that's happening in the present system, even if we didn't change the system. But according to Ralph Nader, and he studies and he reads these things, no, it's not even there. As he says, and I won't read the whole comment, but he says that the cover story in the November issue of the AARP Bulletin, that's the American Association of Retired Persons, is on the elaborate but detectable schemes to swindle Medicare with phantom services, phony rentals of equipment, stolen Medicare numbers, and the like. The author of that, Jay Weaver, writes, quote, so lucrative and so low risk, the FBI reports, that a number of cocaine dealers in Florida and California have switched from illicit drugs to Medicare fraud. It's actually an easier crime to commit without getting caught, unquote. Although more money is finally going for prosecutions, there is nowhere near enough for this corporate crime wave. Medicare's Office of Inspector General asserts that every dollar of law enforcement will save $17 of theft. Okay, if you'd like to read all of Ralph Nader's comment, that's certainly the overview about what the House bill is not doing for us. It does some other things, but the House bill doesn't do the things that prevent the corruption stuff. So progressives or leftists, if you will, see a real problem. Even if you don't have single-payer full Medicare, I have a problem with all these loopholes and all these other problems. We've got to have something. Geez. Okay, I'll leave it there. Go to commondreams.org, commondreams.org, and you can read Ralph Nader's complete statement, Still Waiting for Health Care. They have great statements from Jim Hightower and others about, you know, what's going on today, in-depth reports from people who know, who actually do the research, crunch the numbers, and you don't get that from pundits. Even Amy, Ned, Dennis, or Jay. But let's go back to our pundits here.
Is that okay. .org?
Yes.
Common.
Yeah, commondreams.org. Yeah. It's something I check every day. Actually, you can just get on their mailing list, so that every day you will get the highlights. They'll give you the, you know, the headlines and the names of the people that have comments for that day, and you can either use it or delete it. Okay.
There's a reason why there is no comment single payer, because Obama in his program didn't ask for it and didn't promote it, so that's why.
Right.
It was as simple as that.
It was never on the table to be judged equally with these other plans, because if it was judged equally, and if you wanted to, you know, lower overall cost, you wanted to make the system better and more efficient, you wanted to ensure everybody, that's the way to do it. And how do we know that's the way to do it? All the other major civilized countries of the world do it some version of that way. And just like number one in healthcare, people say, oh, the U.S. has the best health care. If you're really rich, yeah, and you can afford the best doctors, the best hospitals, the best technology.
The best insurance.
Yeah, and the best insurance, either or, then we're not doing too badly. But in childhood mortality, in... So many other ways, as well as like 50,000 people a year die because they don't have health insurance, that if they did and they got treatment, they wouldn't die. I mean, that's more than die in auto accidents each year due to alcohol, which is also another interesting social problem.
See, the Republicans won the election last time.
You think?
Oh, yeah, look at what's happened.
Well,
Did you see the percentage of who's going to win Congress?
Oh, you mean the little election we had a couple weeks ago?
No, not that election. In the polls, in effect, what's happening now is the same thing that happened to Bill Clinton. The Democrats are acting like, you ever try to herd cats? This is what's happening. It's such a broad party. It has everything in it, from Mr. Stupak to... you name them, DeFazio, or from one side of the country to the other.
There's conservative Democrats, in other words.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Republican Party, it's going to shrink so much where there'll only be the so-called maniacs that they give the publicity to. Well, that only means that you have to broaden your base, and if you're going to deal with different philosophies, you should do what they have in New York State. They have a liberal party, conservative party, a Democratic party, and then you'll have to make coalitions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in effect, Obama's big mistake was he saw what happened to Clinton. He thought he could herd cats.
Yeah, he thought he could get a consensus.
He thought he could get a consensus, and he thinks he could work with the Republicans. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a story about him when he was on the Harvard Review. I'm not quite sure what it means to be on the review when you're in law school, either chairman and president. It's a big deal, but why? Yeah,
well, you're an editor. It means that you already are well-respected as knowing
and
how to do that
editor,
research.
Right. Yeah. All the people who were liberals, progressives, the blacks, everybody that had a color all voted for him. But when he got the job, guess what he did? He went to all the typical white folks, the conservatives, the Republicans, and worked with them. That's his style. That's what these people haven't figured out. But either he got a slap in the face, apparently he needs a punch in the nose, to think that they are not going to help you. They're not going to give you one person. So all he did was create this consternation in his own bunch. A single health payer system is Medicare for all. I have Medicare. But I got news for you. It's not free. I pay $833 a month.
That's right.
And the government doesn't control a damn thing about it. I can go to any doctor I want, and he gets what I'm willing to pay. Nobody has said doctors are charging too much. Do you ever hear anybody say it costs too much to go to a doctor? A doctor charged too much? Nobody talks about that. So if we had Medicare for all, Dennis would be paying maybe $1,200 a month until he reaches 65 and it reduces, and nobody tells you where to go. But where are the doctors going to go? To Australia? To Canada? To England? Where are they going to go to get a better deal than they got here? They got no place else to go. If I was arranging this deal, I'd say, this is it. Medicare for all. But it's not free, folks. I pay $833 a month, and I'm supposed to be on Medicare.
And the other countries, though, there's no money changing hands at the personal level. Yes, there's higher taxes for the individual. There's a set amount of taxes for every business to put into the pool to make the medical system and the drugs totally free to the user.
Mm-hmm.
they can get treatment for free to them. I mean, yeah, they're paying taxes, but
or you pay a premium, one right. or the other, somehow.
Well, no, but this individual premium stuff is crazy, and the different and for the drug care plans and that too. I know complexity has its value, but simplicity is best. It's simple.
Right.
It's easier to sell a simple plan, politically, I think, and socially, than a complicated plan. Which one reason the Republicans and the Fox pundits have been able to attack so successfully is that nobody exactly knows what the plan is. It's thousands of pages. It's 9 pounds or 22 pounds of paper.
But they're saying what it is.
And it keeps
they're
changing.
Lying about it, so what's the
yeah,
difference?
It keeps changing. So it's easy to poke holes and criticize death panels or pick little details out, whereas he just had the one simple plan, you know, which I know that logistically you'd have to administratively, there's a lot of things that have to be worked out about how it's really going to take place. But I think that would have been better, and I agree with Ned, is that if he would have started with the best plan and then worked out the logistics.
He was afraid of it. He didn't think
the American people could have come behind it, and they were behind it, according to the polls when they started this, and stayed behind it. And therefore, the politicians wouldn't have much choice to waffle like the conservative Democrats. Now, I don't know. It's too late now. But, you know, as is typical with government or any bureaucracy, and government is certainly bureaucracy, look at the bill we're left with here when people compromise this or that. And abortion is not funded, you know, by the Medicare plan. I mean, all the good, positive reasons for abortion, you can't get funding for. And you know, if you don't want to have an abortion, folks, the government's not going to take it away from you. The point is that there's medical reasons for this stuff, but oh, we got this passed, and now we can get a couple more votes. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. This is our political process, okay? But I think, as Ned said, tactically, it would have been better to start with the best plan. Oh, yeah, let them do the socialism attack at the beginning, at the outset. But the basic plan, which I think should have been free to the users and apply to everybody in the U.S., that would have sold so well. Everybody would have jumped on the bandwagon, even seniors that love their Medicare, because they would say, oh, it's even better. We don't have to pay this amount per year, per month for drugs.
It's different,
you know,
for everybody. Everybody's a million plans. It's
maybe
so complicated.
What income we have is going to be a little bit less, but it'd be a big cost savings overall. Okay, we have 8 minutes
and
left.
And that affects West Dearborn's future economic development.
Well, it affects the city, it affects Michigan, it affects the
everything.
Whole country. Yeah. It's the key thing, not just job stimulus, but the health care. As even Obama has said in speeches, even though he didn't go for the best plan, even though he said he was going to go for the best plan, going to go for universal single payer during the campaign, you know, this is where the main crisis is. Oh. Stopping a couple of wars, too, if possible. But nonetheless, a terrible drain there and people dying and all that. Okay, I wanted to mention one other story that's happening here locally, or at least one more. Let's see, where was it now? The CSO.
Yeah. Well, it looks like the city of Dearborn is going to be extending or looking to extend the deadline for completing their combined sewer overflow project. Which currently is supposed to be completed by 2012. So, since so many things are still incomplete, to put it mildly, as well as it looks like some lawsuits that they're involved in, that they're going to be looking to extend that deadline to complete the project or look in another direction.
Yeah, this is a disaster. We mentioned it over and over again for years here. For example, their former director of public works, who perhaps left the city because of the disaster of CSO, he knew it would catch up to him, and he was not an engineer. What would he know? He picked the most technologically new and extreme of all the plans in order to do this. And it's been a disaster, technically. I think, I'm looking at the story now, is that there's 5 of 8 of the diggings around town that are suspended. They can't even be completed.
So how do you fix that? That's almost impossible.
Well, I don't know. And there's lawsuits between the construction people and the city. You didn't tell us there would be sulfur gas. You didn't tell us there would be shifting sands. And the city said, yes, we did, or you didn't do the right research, blah, blah, blah.
Those companies will go bankrupt, out of business, and you won't be able to do a damn thing and collect a dime.
That's what happens with contractors, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know whose fault this all is? Whoever they hired to do the engineering geotechnical analysis is who didn't do a good enough job. And usually the reason for that is the clients don't want to spend the adequate money in order to do that work. Mm-hmm. They want to save.
But the city picked a high-tech answer solution that hadn't really been proven yet, too.
Well, somebody suggested it.
They entered into this. Yeah, somebody suggested it. It's true. And they thought, oh, that's going to be cool. That's 30-foot diameter tunnels under Dearborn. Completely impossible to do. The first one they tried was off Rotunda Drive, not far from my house, and a guy got killed in the construction crew, sinking sands, sulfur gas. Impossible to do that. And then they thought of these upright ones, these long tunnels down into the ground, which they're trying to dig one in West Dearborn now, and so they've been changing things. The good news is here, well, we're stuck with this kind of plan. I don't think we can shift right now. They've already sunk. Is that a bad pun? We've already sunk a couple hundred million into this.
But how do they make it work? That's the important
right.
thing. Now, it's not even if you have to spend more money to fix it, the question is, can you fix it?
Right.
You know, everything is not engineerly feasible.
Well, I think the answer will come from our new city engineer. Okay.
Mr. Patel.
M. Yunus Patel. Turns out that he has been part of the city engineering department
for a while.
I asked Amy to do a little research on that, if you want to make a comment.
Oh, just that you're right. He has been with the city of Dearborn, the engineering department, for 20 years. He served as the assistant city engineer for the last 6 years.
Well, it says in the paper that in terms of his hiring, in the paper I'm referring to, the Dearborn Times-Herald, on page 5A, is that he in particular, the last year, has been making it a top priority to look at all his engineering mess with the CSO. And so now he's in charge, in fact. Now he's in control. And we hope that maybe in a couple months, when he gets into his new position, he can give us directly a report right here in the Journal, if the city's Office of Public Information will allow him to speak for himself. Because there's a lot of ugly sides to this story, a lot of fingers to point at people currently in the administration, because a lot of our incumbents on the city council and our mayor have been there quite a while, although Jack O'Reilly was not mayor when these decisions were made. Mayor Guido.
They don't
was.
Know anything about those things. They only know what other
well,
people
they're not engineers, you know. And I think you need an engineering background to totally understand or assess appropriately some of these proposals.
I'm going
to tell
you what
made.
They need to do.
So,
they need to pay somebody, a couple of people, some very good geotechnical engineering firms, several of them, pay them and have them look into this and see what they say collectively. If you get five firms with a major reputation of the kinds of things they've done and say, this is what we plan to do, did it make sense? And if you find out, if you trust these people and they say, this was a nonsensical thing to do, it should have been approached another way, and now you're going to find out who steered you wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not the contractor. The contractors aren't smart enough to know whether something is the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. They may have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
You hire these kinds of engineers to decide. You know, when they built Hoover Dam, they didn't ask the contractor how to do it.
The city has an engineering department. I don't know how many people are in that department, but they may not have the resources to totally be a specialist in this kind of issue. Also, I mentioned, well, we're into this now. We got to keep doing it until we find a way to dig that doesn't collapse or...
Absolutely.
You know, but we're not. I think we can still go backwards, because one of the original plans that was turned down 8-10 years ago was, instead of all this digging underground with this real high-tech plan that never had worked yet, is to simply lose three holes at the Herndon Public Golf Course to turn, because Dearborn owns that, to turn it from an 18 to a 15-hole golf course.
And do
that improved my score.
And evaporation pond out there. Now, evaporation, you said, well, it'll smell up the golf course because you're putting your raw sewage out there. No, evaporation ponds don't smell. They can treat them so they don't smell. But you lose three holes of the Herndon Golf Course. It would have been only $180 million compared to $320 million.
Maybe lose the whole golf course and do something really sensible with it.
You could lose nine holes and still have a nine-hole course left. And if you want to play 18, you play each one twice. Okay, I'm not a golfer. I know that... It's wonderful to have a public golf course.
It's the European thing to do.
But we could have done that, but we didn't want to lose any holes at the Herndon Golf Course, and so the taxpayers of Dearborn will have to pay 30,000 residents over $200 million extra to save the Herndon. And I don't think anybody understands that. You know, but several mayoral candidates who faced Mayor Guido were actually saying that, and they were engineers, and I interviewed them here on this show. And I understand that plan was out there, but we can't take three holes or more away from the Herndon Golf Course and save $200 million? Oh, well, you know, I think they probably could go back because, you know, $320 million, we probably spent all of that already, but, you know, if we're going to finish it, it's going to be another $320 million. I don't know. I'm just, you know, because we've got five of the eight diggings that aren't working, that can't be renovated.
Is there all the money? Is it there? Somebody have it? Is it?
It's all taxpayer money, so we just have to hit the taxpayers.
It's in a fund someplace?
320 was more or less approved, but I bet the way the law reads, they can get more from us. Because I've heard, again, off the record, and that doesn't mean it's true, is that this could be $500, $600, $700 million when it's done.
So it's not all money they have. It's future money that could be taxed.
Initially, they promised the taxpayers that the whole deal would have been $320 million, but that was for the plan that would already be completed 2 years ago. And it's not completed. And then there's all these lawsuits, and the city might lose some, and so on. Yeah, well, we got to go.